Hello and welcome to On Spec, the podcast that does slow journalism, the kind that takes time, telling stories that make you think, feel, and act to do good beyond your own borders. My name is Nafisa Haji, and I will be your guest host for this season. In season 5, the next 9 episodes are a slight departure from past seasons of On Spec. Instead of a series of multiple stories covering a global theme, this season will follow many threads of one amazing story. A story of courageous dissent, of oppression, torture, protest, exile, intrigue, espionage, organized crime, and poetry. It's a story that On Spec's regular host, Fariba Nawa, and her excellent team of international journalists have been tirelessly investigating over many months, following turns and twists that kept them guessing and which will keep you on the edge of your seats. This season is called Lethal Dissent, Iran's Hunt for Its Citizens Abroad. With Iran in the headlines again, as I record today, we are hearing reports of a helicopter crash in which hardline President Raisi has lost his life. This season's story is more relevant than ever. And the subjects of it, the people you will get to know with me over the next few weeks, must be struggling with very personal reactions to the news today. What happens when dissent and protest against an authoritarian regime, in this case Iran, crosses borders? When people fleeing oppression work to rebuild their lives in exile, only to be pursued by the danger they thought they'd escaped? For Fariba Nawa, those questions were personal. Fariba Nawa's roots in Afghanistan, she was born there and has covered its recent history and news extensively as a journalist and author, left her feeling hopeless when the country fell back under Taliban control, especially when it came to the issue of women's rights. She felt the whole endeavor to bring democracy and freedom to Afghanistan had failed. When recent protests erupted in neighboring Iran over the issue of women and their rights, Fariba's hopes for Afghanistan rose again. If ordinary people in Iran, men and women together, succeeded there, it could have a positive effect in Afghanistan too. When Fariba first learned that dissidents fleeing Iran and taking refuge in Turkey were being attacked by their own government on foreign ground, that the Iranian regime considered them a threat worthy of pursuing beyond its borders, she knew it was a story she had to pursue. These were protesters and human rights activists willing to put their lives on the line. They were people the world should know about. Join me as we tune into Fariba Nawa and begin season 5 of On Spec, Lethal Dissent, Iran's Hunt for Its Citizens Abroad, with episode 1, Prologue.
When the sun sets in Istanbul, it drops behind the giant dome of the ancient Hagia Sophia. The light in the sky fades, and the Bosphorus Strait, which flows through the middle of the city, turns from blue to black. Cargo ships glide slowly through the dusk. Sometimes fog creeps in and settles over the streets as night chills the city. And once my kids are asleep, I walk to the desk in my living room and get settled in. This is when I work. When I work on the same project I've been working on for more than a year, almost 2. I spread documents across my desk. Transcripts from interviews, pictures of Turkish gangsters and spies.
Let's see.
I read and reread conversations between secret operatives, trying to wrap my head around a sprawling mission.
Okay, this guy's saying money was supposed to come to my account from Iran. Then this guy asks, which account?
When it's quitting time around 1 a.m., my head spins from it all. That's what happens when you report a story about espionage. It's murky, confusing. People lie. I take everything I've spread all over my desk and gather it up to look at tomorrow. Most of it is evidence. Evidence used in a big trial. According to Turkish authorities, the trial evidence tells a clear story. a story of Iran's campaign to kidnap its own citizens abroad. Citizens who were dissidents, people who for one reason or another say they could no longer live under oppression. Some were even vocal in their resistance, which, when it comes to Iran, can be a death warrant. I got used to the bus ride to Chalayan Courthouse. It dumps you right outside it.
For the trial that we are following, it is in the heavy penalties court because it's an espionage trial. It's been a long haul, more than a year, almost a year and a half. Some of them, about four or five, are still in prison, so they come in handcuffed. I'm about to go in and I have to turn off my recorder here.
The defendants in this trial are suspected spies, businessmen, former cops, and a Turkish government official, all gathered together in one courtroom in Istanbul. What I saw in that courtroom, the witness testimonies, the judges' rulings, all of it kept me surprised. Day after day, as the prosecutors unveiled how Iran ran an international kidnapping operation. That is, if you believe the Turkish authorities. Every defendant, without exception, denied they committed a crime. What I know for sure is that Iran's operation succeeded, not only by grabbing exiles abroad, but by getting inside their heads. I'm Fariba Nawa. I'm a reporter living in Istanbul, Turkey. This is Lethal Dissent. Episode 1, Prologue. I need to tell you how I got here and how Iran got here to this point where it started hunting its own people in exile. I grew up in Afghanistan right next door to Iran. We share the same language, Farsi, and a 572-mile border. When I was little, I used to snuggle up next to my dad while he listened to the radio. That's how I found out about the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979. The news was everywhere.
This is the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite.
Good evening. A tearful Shah of Iran left his country today on a vacation from which he may never return.
Iran's government was a secular, repressive monarchy led by a king, the Shah. Most Iranians were glad to see him exiled.
Some people cut the Shah's portrait out of Iranian currency notes.
At this point, Iran's new leader was pretty much a foregone conclusion. He was a dissident living in France.
For the last 7 weeks, this small village has become the center of resistance to the Shah of Iran. He is the 78-year-old Muslim religious leader Ruhollah Khomeini. His title is Ayatollah. To protect him from possible assassination, the French police are providing heavy round-the-clock security.
After the Shah fled, the dissident Ayatollah Khomeini returned to Iran. Over time, there were some changes that were positive. Some people in the lower class became middle class. More people had access to clean water and electricity. Literacy rates increased. Khomeini took the wealth that the Shah had been hoarding and tried to redistribute it. But it all came at a cost.
And despite Khomeini's undoubted charisma, the way Iran is ruled is increasingly criticized as reactionary, autocratic, and arbitrary.
Khomeini's government became a theocracy based on radical interpretations of Shia Islam and became even more repressive than the Shah's government. Within weeks of taking power, they began executing officials who used to work for the Shah's government. Over the next 10 years, thousands of citizens were arrested for their political affiliations or because they weren't adequately religious. Many of them were tortured, executed, or both. Women were sent back into their homes and forced to wear a headscarf in public. since 1979, that's how it's been. Until once again, Iranians got tired of the oppression. What does that oppression look like today? Well, if you get caught dancing in public, that's 70 lashes or 2 years imprisonment. Dancing in private with the opposite sex, maybe 100 lashes and jail time. Convert to another religion, punishable by death, unless it's Islam. Even then, it needs to be the officially recognized version of Islam. Being gay is punishable by death. Reading a Western newspaper on the internet? Good luck, they're blocked. Women must wear a headscarf that covers every strand of hair, or they could face fines, have their cars confiscated, or be forced to wash dead bodies. Rich people get away with a lot of these things because they can bribe the authorities, but not everyone can. Which is why embezzled money, billions of dollars, stolen by the political class over the last decade, is all the more infuriating for Iranians. So like I said, Iranians got tired of it all. They protested against the government and the bad economy, choked by Western sanctions. And there have even been citizen uprisings, like in November 2019. It's remembered as Bloody November. Because the government's crackdown was ruthless. Protesters ran into a marsh to hide. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard surrounded it and machine gunned them. At least 1,500 people were thought to be killed. I tell you all this so that you understand how Iran got here, how Iran's relationship with its own citizens became so dire that many Iranians are risking their lives to resist oppression. The state, in turn, is trying to squash that resistance, both at home and by hunting down dissidents abroad. Dissidents like Ruhollah Zam, an Iranian journalist. In 2019, he was living in France. He was editor of a news blog that had about 1 million followers on the messenger app Telegram. This is him interviewing a woman arrested by Iran's security services. She says they were arresting her friend for not wearing her hijab properly, and they spotted her filming it. Were they part of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps? They were plainclothes police, she says. That happens in Iran. Government security services will walk around in everyday clothes and make arrests. Ruhollah Zam was not shy about his anti-regime views. He conducted damning interviews like this one, posted news, and covered Bloody November. He even published a manual for making a Molotov cocktail. That got his Telegram account suspended. But he thought he was okay. He was in France. Then he went silent for a while. And when he resurfaced, he was on TV, sitting in a chair with the red, white, and green flag of the Islamic Republic of Iran beside him. I apologize to the regime for everything that's occurred, he says. Zam had returned to Iran. A few weeks later, he was back on Iranian state TV a second time. It's a show called With No Formality. There's an interviewer, and then there's Zam sitting across from him. Zam's face is pale, and he has dark circles under his eyes. The host starts grilling Zam. He asks him, what was the aim for Ahmad News? That's where Zam posted news for his followers on Telegram. To confront financial corruption, Zam says. The host follows up. Do you think the way you were going about it was logical? How is it illogical to you, Zam asked. You were provoking violence on the street, the host says. At the end, the host asks Zam. What sentence would you give yourself? Zam smirks. From the beginning, they told me they would execute me, so... Then the host turns and looks into the camera. He thanks the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps for letting the show interview Zam outside the prison where he's being held.
داشته باشیم ممنون از همه شما که این گفتگو رو دنبال کردید خدا نگهدار.
Within days, the government announced that they had executed Ruhollah Zam. They hanged him for corruption on earth, which is a religious way of describing people who the regime considers a threat to the well-being of society. Zam's colleagues told the French press he didn't go back to Iran willingly. Somehow, he had been lured from France to Iraq, and it was in Iraq, right next door to Iran, that the regime grabbed him. And he wasn't the only one.
Turkish investigators claim they uncovered an elaborate abduction plan carried out on their soil by Iranian intelligence. The honey trap was this young woman, according to the Turkish authorities.
In 2020, a woman lured a dissident to Turkey, where he was drugged, then smuggled into Iran. He was later executed. Another was on a layover in Dubai when the regime nabbed him. He was taken back to Iran and sentenced to death.
Jamshid Shahmad is accused of being a leader of a pro-monarchist terrorist group. He denies the claim. Amnesty International have condemned what it calls a sham trial. His daughter.
In each of these cases, only the basic facts were clear. One of Ruhollah Zam's friends told a reporter he was dragged into a dirty psychological game designed by this regime. What's that dirty game? And how exactly is Iran playing it? Iran doesn't view it as a dirty game. To them, kidnapping dissidents in exile and executing them justly addresses a national security threat. That's the reasoning you can gather from the government statements. But there's another topic Iran's statements don't address. Some of the dissidents Iran chases aren't brought back to Iran and executed. They're executed abroad, assassinated. And when it comes to these cases, Iran doesn't comment. They often deny being involved. Not only did I want to know how Iran is doing all this, I wanted to know why they keep doing it. And then there are the dissidents. Why do they keep speaking out despite the potentially mortal risk? This series is about what I discovered. The kidnappings and killings are the last link in a whole chain of events. The first link is a gamble that more and more Iranians are taking to stand up to the regime by speaking out, by refusing to obey. And the regime is reckoning with yet another refusal to obey. In 2022, the regime detained a young woman named Mahsa Amini for not wearing her headscarf properly. She died in custody. These dissidents are ordinary citizens, desperate for change. So that's where I'll start, with two ordinary citizens, friends, who worked as government officials in Shiraz, Iran. One of them lives, one of them dies.
I'm Nafisa Haji. Lethal Dissent is reported by Fariba Nava, reporting in Turkey by Beril Eski. The series is produced by Chris Harlan Dunaway. Our editor is Ibi Caputo. Additional research by Umar Farouk, fact-checking by Beril Eski and John Klopotowski. Özge Sebzici is our photographer and multimedia producer. Artwork for the podcast is by Hatiye Garib. Musical score and sound design by Uzer Ahmed. Legal review by Eric Brass. This story wouldn't be possible without support from the Pulitzer Center and Radio Zamane. Thank you to our partners, The Verge and PRX. Special thanks to executive producer for The World, Dan Lothian, and managing editor for The World, Tinku Ray, our friend ER, Shahnam Gulshani, Adnan Devrim, Hamish Brown, Kate Ellis, Stephen Smith, Levi Bridges, Banu Azizian, Adisha Azizian,
Yuta Nujer, Rishad and Alan at Splice Media, and to the Iranians who helped us, whose full names we can't use for security reasons. Thank you, HM, AM, and MB. Iranian dissidents targeted for kidnappings and killings, some of them mysteriously turning up back in Iran, apologizing publicly to the regime they spent years protesting, and then executed. In this episode, Fariba Nawa gave us the history and set up the scene for how this came to be. I'm Nafisa Haji. Tune in next week to hear about two friends, poetry lovers, both working for reform in Iran, who fall afoul of their government and are then forced to escape. In Lethal Descent, Iran's Hunt for Its Citizens Abroad, Episode 2, The Poet. Please write with any questions you might have at onspecpodcast@gmail.com. Keep listening, and don't forget, we need you as a Patreon subscriber. Go to onspecpodcast.com and become a member to help support our next season. Also, please follow us and let us know what you think on Twitter at onspecstories, on Instagram at onspecpodcast, and on Facebook at onspecpodcast. If you have the time, please do rate or review OnSpec on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts.